Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation about elections. And, as we get through, these last couple of days before people go to the polls, we just thought that we would check in with someone who's no stranger to the platform. That is Ndumiso Kubeka, who is the chief economist over at KH. Equity Partners. We spoke to him earlier in the year, sort of at the beginning of the year in January, just to get a pulse check of where we were, maybe sort of like an outlook for 2024 economy wise. And we thought we would call back on him in May, just as South Africa goes to the polls. It's a very important election, and there's a lot of anticipation around this one, so we just thought let's check in with him. Ndumiso, greetings to you.
Good day, Mudiwa. I hope that you're well, and thank you so much for having me.
Now, let's begin with the question that I'm sure that a lot of people are asking each other, asking themselves, and one that I'm sure that you have probably been asked ad nauseam, by now. How are you feeling about the election?
I think it's an interesting election, one that most of us are anticipating to record some significant changes. I think particularly because we've seen a number of disruptors in terms of new entrants in the political scene. So it'll be interesting whether or not it sustains, for instance, the majority of the ruling party in South Africa, or it contributes to decreasing their majority in the South African case. And I think, of course, from an investment point of view, the big question is, in the event that we have a coalition government at a national level, what would be the possible implications in terms of policy coherence, policy consistency, and what would be the anticipated changes? And as a result, I think it would inform, the kind of allocations that investors would then need to make in this environment. So after May 29th, it will certainly be an interesting period, I think, for the markets, and I think in terms of the real economy as well.
When you think about where we are right now, right, I think one of the other things, and I think we mentioned this when we spoke in January, apart from the fact that we have a big election in South Africa, it's just a generally a big election year globally. Probably the election that, most people are looking at and global markets are looking at will be the US election. Many expecting that Donald Trump, might be elected again into power. Some expecting Joe Biden to, maybe put up a fight, but, that's the one that a lot of people are looking at. But across the world, there's a lot of action happening on the political front. How do you, gauge the mood in the market? How do you gauge the mood in the market, and especially people that are, making decisions right now, right? Is it a wait and watch approach, as these various polls happen, or is it, we just roll with the punches as and when things come, right? We'll be good and great.
I think based on some of the data points that we've seen in this particular point, and especially given what you've highlighted around the much anticipated elections in the US, Donald Trump is indeed putting another fight in terms of getting back into office, which would be interesting from a market's perspective, because it then raises maybe even the recent development from Biden's administration in terms of increasing trade tariffs for input goods that come from China. And so again, the China-US story is potentially coming at the center in terms of global international trade and finance. And of course, the implications of that, as you would know, that the US and of course the Chinese economy are crucial for the South African economy. And so whenever there is a declining aggregate demand on the China side, it has a significant impact for our resources from a South Africa perspective. And of course, if the Chinese economy as well is not performing well, it also has that negative implication for the South African economy. On the US side, when it comes to issues such as what the Federal Reserve does in terms of the question of inflation, which has continued to be a theme even in 2024, it also has a ripple effect in terms of the South African monetary policy positions, because what we've seen tracking since 1994 is that there's a level of correlation between the Federal Reserve monetary policy position and that of South Africa. So it's a very important indicator in terms of what the anticipated trajectory is. Beginning of the year when we spoke, some of the elements that we're anticipating is that in the second half of 2024 would anticipate the commencement of a reduction in terms of interest rates and monetary policy easing internationally and in the South African environment. Given the recent statements from the Federal Reserve in the US, that might be pushed further back into later into the year. So the developments in terms of the US elections will significantly have an important implication for South Africa, both on the trade and investment side, but I think in terms of the performance of our current account and the South African case as well.
Just a quick follow-up. Obviously, there's that, I don't know what word to use. There's that correlation that you've just highlighted. And South Africa is obviously not the only, country, and the Reserve Bank is not the only central bank that tends to take that, what you call this direction from what the US Fed is doing. Is there any chance that our MPC in South Africa might decide to, start their, their interest rate cuts sooner than the US? Or do we sort of not want to rattle the cages, so to say?
I think for our Monetary Policy Committee, if they were to start their easing cycle, the biggest case that I would anticipate would justify the MPC doing that is if the consumer price index registers lower than what we've seen for the April number of 5.2%. And so they're consistently talking about, of course, the midpoint of 4.5% in terms of registering it there, and also looking quite closely at specific elements such as the contribution of food inflation in that particular number, and as well the contribution of administered taxes in relation to that number. I think those three factors would largely determine the policy direction that the MPC would take. If it draws closer to the 4.5, then we would most likely then see the beginning of the easing cycle for the South African Reserve Bank. If, for instance, in the US case, the inflation environment is not easing at the same rate in which South Africa's is. So that is the only instance or scenario where I would foresee a situation where the MPC was start deviating sooner than the US Federal Reserve in this instance.
I guess all of us now are just crossing our fingers and hoping that the US, starts cutting, because at the moment it does seem as if that's the most feasible scenario in which we do start, seeing some of those cuts coming down. Maybe to bring it back to what you call this, just to focus on the SA level, right? We often ask you, just around what type of discussions maybe you're having with businesses, that type of thing. Maybe we can ask you now, to say where we are. We've spoken the big picture, we've spoken globally, to understand what the global picture looks like as various countries get into elections, particularly the US election, and how that's likely to filter into our monetary policy. But on the ground, right, businesses, that are actually trading, that are actually operating, right? How, as far as you can see, have they tempered their own expectations? Usually in an election year, there tends to be a wait and watch approach. You know, we sort of wait to see. We're not making too drastic of a decision. You know, we're just waiting to see who wins the election. And then from there, we know what we're actually going to do. Has that also been the case this year?
It certainly appears to be the case, Mudiwa. You're quite correct in the sense that a lot of businesses, both domestic South African businesses and multinational companies as well, have sort of taken the approach of the wait and see, particularly because I guess election news, from an election cycle point of view in the economy and pricing it in, typically takes around 3 months, because you'd also need to, you know, install a new government, would need to understand what the formation of that government looks like, who is in that government, what is sort of the envisaged plans in this instance. Although even prior to the elections, there have been continued work that has been going on in preparation for the seventh administration. In terms of the real economy and businesses that are trading as well, we've sort of seen a continued wait and see approach. So no big sort of investment moves that are being made or pronounced, particularly because of the need to understand what is the likely policy positions and priority of the seventh administration in this instance. I think as well, the whole coalition discussion features quite prominently, because it raises specific political and systemic risks for businesses in terms of really understanding if their industry is likely to be impacted by policy coherence or the lack thereof going forward.
Just maybe as a quick one around that same attitude and mindset, your reading on the recent non-decision by S&P, you know, not to change what you call the South Africa's credit rating, you know, on the currency side as well as on the macro side. Would you interpret that as sort of being the same, you know, wait and see approach, that it was too close to the election for them to make, you know, any decision, and rather let's wait until November or any other time for them to make that review?
I would certainly share the same sentiment, especially if we look at some of the updated numbers in terms of the government debts to GDP number, still relatively around the same range of 72% of GDP. When we look at the budget deficit, seemingly Treasury is still on track for it to still be below 2%. When we look at maybe high sensitive data such as the retail sales, the last data set recorded 1.4% growth in the recent print. And so there isn't any big movements that I think from an S&P perspective would have justified maybe having a negative outlook that sees a deterioration as a result of the outcome of the elections, if we're looking at a coalition picture. So I think as a result of the closeness of those elections that you're mentioning, it's one of the contributions that I think they then took the position that they took. And perhaps then we would like to see the update in the second half of the year and what that would then potentially mean, because then we'll then have a clearer understanding in terms of the policy positions. I think in some of the conversations and the campaign trails that we've seen from various political parties, we've even heard instances of opposition parties saying, look, we would be willing to pitch in a coalition environment if we're given maybe the role of the Minister of Finance, which is a crucial function in the South African environment, and particularly for capital markets to finance South Africa's very important economic activities. Others are saying, no, we'd be able to trade it off if we get deputy president. And then we then ask the questions, what would be the implications of that in the running of government and the consistency and the structuring of government. So that position, I think, was a cautious approach from an S&P point of view to see what is then the likelihood of what would transpire in the second half of the year.
Mm. It did seem, that was also my read, of the situation. Let's just, wait and see what, what's actually happening there. And also at the same time, the fact that I think everyone keeps talking about the coalitions, right? So I think that's personally one of the things that I'm waiting to see on in terms of the outcomes of the election, and especially because coalitions haven't boded, so well in certain parts of the country. What will that do to sentiment? Because people tend to act on what they have seen, not what people say that they're going to do, right? So, the market would have seen, perhaps not the best, position when it comes to coalitions in the past. If that is the case, this time around, how does that, how does that temper, the way that market players, are going to adjust their mindsets, going forward. Now, I think we've spoken global, we've spoken national, we've spoken companies. Maybe we can end off just talking about the ordinary South African, because it's the ordinary South African that's going to the polls. Fortunately, unfortunately, companies don't get to vote, but it's their individual constituents, it's the employees, it's executives, it's managers, it's foremen, it's till operators, it's the people inside the companies that actually go to the polls. So at the end of the day, what you're quoting is the ordinary South African, and then everything filters filters through from there. Big ticket items, as far as you can see, from an economic point of view, we have the obvious ones, people worried about inflation, interest rates, and I think load shedding are the obvious ones. Do you think there's anything else that's occupying the mind of a voter economically this time around?
I think there are quite a number of additional things. I think even the stability of government going forward is a big feature, as you had highlighted earlier. And I was personally also watching before we go to the polls, whether the National Council of Provinces was going to ratify the Public Service Administration Act and I think the Public Management Administration Act, because though that particular piece of legislation speaks to the question linked to the National Development Plan of there being a head of the public service in South Africa, which is an interesting dynamic, because regardless of which political party would be there, we would have this most senior civil servant that is able to manage transitions between elections. So I think for the normal South African citizen, that concern around the stability of government would have been addressed if, for instance, that bill, that amendment bill was signed prior to the elections. So it will be interesting to see whether or not it will be signed post the elections and what it would mean for normal South Africans in terms of the stability of government. I think the other big ticket item is, of course, in relation to this question of jobs, because there have been a number of policy proposals, particularly in terms of what political parties are saying they intend to do with respect to driving and stimulating entrepreneurship. Others are focusing on the green economy. Others are driving the narrative around regional integration and so on and so forth. They are all nice policy proposals, but I think maybe on my side, one of the limitations that a normal South African might note is whether or not those policy proposals are embedded on South Africa's comparative advantage internationally, because ultimately that's what will inform the net jobs that we then are able to create in the South African environment. And I don't necessarily think that some of the policy propositions have been located within that particular context. For example, the question of South Africa holding over 70% of manganese in the world, that articulation does not come out clearly in terms of economic policy proposals, in terms of driving a primary, secondary, and tertiary value chain across that value proposition. And I think it creates the continued narrative, you know, around what the resource curse means for South African, African countries in 2024, and whether or not are we doing something to sort of turn around and change that picture. So definitely that, I think, is also linked to what that means for increased investment in the South African environment as a normal consumer, if that investment will be able to impact me. I know, for instance, in the Vaal, which is one of the areas where I'm from, the question of ArcelorMittal and divestment there in that particular area from a steel manufacturing point of view has significant, I think, over 6,000 job implications in that particular environment. And so that becomes the prominent question to say, from a Gauteng perspective, what is the likely impact of really turning around the divestment picture in specific sectors that have been historically important for the creation of jobs in local economies? So I would think that those are some of the issues that are at forefront. And ultimately, finally, the question of safety and security, crime, it continues to be a big issue that affects all of our families. And what would be the real plan from political parties to really crack down on that question of crime?
Yeah, the crime issue is quite a big one. I remember I was in Dubai a few years ago talking to, you know, some people that were interested in investing in South Africa. And just by engaging with them, you could tell that these people had been doing a lot of their homework. They understood where the opportunities lie. They understood, you know, the picture of what South Africa's macros look like and, you know, where they could, you know, come in and invest. But when I was asking about concerns, the big one that came was safety and health, because it's like, well, if we want to put our money in, you're right, how safe are, you know, our people or anyone that we employ if we are to come and put any money down, you know, to start something, you know, in the country? So I think there does need to be an appreciation that some of these things that are somewhat normalized do have a real world impact, you know, from an investment from an investment point of view. As you were talking just now about stability and also employment, I thought maybe this is where we can end off, you know, just to pick your brain on something. In this current election cycle, at least in the US, much earlier on, there was a US candidate called Andrew Yang. And one of the things that Andrew Yang was proposing was a universal basic income, right? And the premise is simple, to say, guys, where we're going, right, it's not that companies are going to stop making money, but they're going to be requiring less people, right? So we need to have a safety net of some sort, you know, to actually make sure that people do or are able to at least have some type of an income going forward. I'm looking at the landscape, you know, across a number of sectors that have been cutting jobs, even in the South African context, and you look even in the listed space. When you see retrenchments or a restructuring, it doesn't always mean that that business is doing well. They are literally restructuring how they operate. They have seen that they can either be more efficient or they can cut the need for certain roles and still be able to do the same, if not more, you know, work at the end of the day. So yeah, just keen to end off with your thoughts around some of those issues, because without getting too much into it, I do see current social spending in South Africa sort of being symptomatic, you know, of that. That as much as we're fighting for jobs, it's not that the economy or companies are necessarily shrinking. There's a lot of stuff around divestiture, that's true, but you know, for the most part, South Africa's economy still keeps ticking along, even if it's at 0.5 or 1%. There's still the same amount of production happening But slowly but surely, there's just less people that are needed. And one wonders what, you know, that picture looks like, you know, in future.
Sure. That's an interesting area of inquiry there, Mudiwa, because earlier this year, the chief economist of the IMF was in the country and he was presenting their economic outlook. And one of the interesting areas in his presentation that he shared was the impact of AI and I guess computerizations on low-income countries, developing countries and developed countries. And he found that developed countries have over, I think, just over 50% exposure in terms of AI integration when it comes to the automation of specific tasks. So the implications for, you know, greater productivity outcomes with lower headcount being a great exposure for developed countries. South Africa finds itself in an interesting position because we have an economy that is knowledge intensive and services based. So that exposure is at the level of around 40% based on the IMF's outlook. But at the same time, we also have a by and large informal economy as well. So the picture might be mixed in terms of what would that look like. And so then relating back to South Africa's social spending to really defend, and really South Africa's social spending, I guess, has been used to sort of de-risk the country in many ways, from instability and so on and so forth. So the likelihood of the positioning and orientation of South Africa to really seriously consider a basic income grant, it's likely that South Africa thinks along those ways. The biggest, I guess, questions, not only for South Africa, but for countries across the globe that are exposed to, you know, the new integration of AI in the automation of specific tasks, is how do we create then a new value that would translate in terms of an increase in job count, which is an interesting area of study to really think about if there is such. Because if we think about manufacturing, not so much the case. If we think about maybe an industry such as ICT in the development of software and so forth, I've seen some of the work that you put out in terms of new softwares that are coming out and so on and so forth. Even software developers seem to be somewhat at risk given some of the new solutions that are introduced in the market. So it continues to become a big question. I mean, even Elon Musk at some point was driving the question of a basic income grant at some point because of seeing the greater contribution of technology. So from a policy and labor market policy question, it raises interesting policy positions around what should then industrial development look like, and industrial development that is labor intensive, and then raises the questions, which areas are likely to be more labor intensive than others. We've seen maybe medium to small scale farmers not adopting automated practices, but again, it can be labor intensive, but the wage is not necessarily attractive, particularly to a lot of young people. So you find the average work and average farm in South Africa is 54 years old. So it raises the question, there's a labor intensive opportunity there, but the attractiveness of that labor opportunity is not necessarily one that garners the interest of many young people. So the question you raise is so crucial in that point, and I think requires just for us to a whole session on its own to deep dive into it, because the implications are huge at a sectoral level. And of course, what should be then the policy positions that would incentivize certain behavior directionally, what should happen in that case? So, we'll have to see.
Yeah, definitely, we'll have to see, and that's where we end off for today. Hopefully, you know, we'll definitely get you know, Ndumiso back, you know, in a couple of months once the dust is settled on the election, you know, to attack, maybe do like he suggested, a full session on this particular question, because I do think it's an important one. It's it's one that the global economy is likely going to be grappling with, and one that South Africa, and especially I like the fact that, you know, when he articulates that South Africa does have that orientation towards social spending, you know, as a way, you know, as a way to de-risk the economy, then chances are South Africa is the type of economy that would be considering something like that, but what are the impacts thereof? Because social spending is already such a big, proportion of government spending, right? You know, what does it mean, going forward? And I guess these are some of the questions that our elected officials are going to be thinking about and grappling with, post the 29th of May. And we just wait to see how all of that has gone. So just talking about what's been happening in the world, a lot to consider as South Africa is about to go to the polls on the 29th of May. You've got the local election, but all of that is within the context of many elections going on around the world. I think I read a stat at the start of the year to say that there were over 70 global elections that are going to be taking place. Obviously, the two most relevant for South Africa is obviously the local one, but secondly, the US one, because that then feeds into what the likely interest rate picture will look like for South Africa, in a couple of months. Also, just talking about some of the concerns that companies and, more importantly, individuals, because as we articulated, it is the people that are going to the polls and that are going to be making these decisions. And then ending off, just talking about some of the bigger picture issues around, issues such as unemployment, Dumiso making the point to say that those are some of the things that individuals will be thinking about, policy direction from that point of view, as well as, stability, around the government itself. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Dumiso Pubeka, who is the chief economist over at KH Equity Partners. Dumiso, thank you so much for being with us today.
Madiwa, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.